Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome. Welcome. It is Friday, and never have I felt more fry-yay about it, as my kids say. I am really kind of honestly excited to see this week come to an end. I've had a challenging week in that I've been traveling a little bit, having to drive to different cities in Texas this week for speaking engagements. And I want to share with you that actually over the last 2 days, both yesterday and the day before, I was involved in two pretty serious car accidents, actually, both of which I'm happy to say were not my fault, but regardless, I was not hurt, and it really is a miracle. And it has just been a crazy 48 hours, let me tell you that, just from getting in the first accident, having my husband have to drive to another city to be to my rescue, like 4 hours away, and then getting in an accident in the rescue car. Can you imagine this? Like, we're driving the rescue car home. And the second one, there was road debris, a big piece of metal, a metal sheet that came up off the freeway and came at my car and really cut the front of it in half, honestly, if I'm being really honest, and did irreparable damage there. But thank God we were safe, and I can see God's hand in so many ways, and I'm very, very grateful for that. And so, you know, it's tempting, I think, sometimes when we have days that are frustrating in circumstances that seem scary, it would be easy for me just to be frustrated and grumpy, but I was really just trying in those moments to consciously choose joy and to find gratitude and to practice what I preach. And when I was rear-ended the first day, honestly, oh, my first thought was such irritation, like, oh my goodness, I cannot believe this. But, you know, I thought, what would Dr. Nurse Mama say? Well, she would say to practice gratitude in this moment. And so I just prayed and thanked God for keeping me safe, for keeping the other person safe, for there being no injuries, which was miraculous in and of itself, and that God helped me to be kind. And, you know, there are circumstances that happened because of that and people I encountered that I wouldn't have encountered before. And I just trust that if I am walking with the Lord, that He is not surprised by any of this. And so if that is you, if you are in a place where you're just thinking, oh my goodness, everything seems to be going wrong, or if you're on the struggle bus, just know that you are not alone. And there are some simple practices we've been talking about that I've been taking a journey on for 52 Habits for Healthy Parenting that I am trying to adopt, and they really do make all of the difference. So we have talked about things like praying and expressing gratitude to enhance our mental health. And that is what I did yesterday after I had a few more human thoughts pass through my mind in those moments of frustration. But you know, even yesterday while we were waiting 5.5 hours for a tow truck, yes, we were, I thought it was a beautiful day. And we were near a field of bluebonnets, which are wildflowers that bloom in Texas every spring. I got to spend the whole day with my husband. We were just talking and chatting and spending time together. And there are always blessings that come out of those things. And so I hope that you are thinking about how can you incorporate those habits in, because let me tell you, it is a lot easier when you are working on those habits when things are not going wrong, so that when things do go wrong, you feel like, okay, I'm equipped and I have some skills and tools and resources to enact here. And that habit we have been talking about this week is family dinner. If you missed Monday's show with Pastor Ryan Rush, go back and give it a listen, because we honestly had a great conversation about his book, Restore the Table. I got my copy in the mail this week. It's such a cheerful red and white checker. It looks like a picnic tablecloth, and today looks like a perfect day for a picnic. But it is called Restore the Table, Discovering the Powerful Connections at Meaningful Mealtimes. And we had such a good conversation about the biblical emphasis of taking meals together and how much that has to do with relationship building. So he is issuing his church a challenge to have 5 meals a week with your family. So wherever you are, whatever your family situation looks like, I challenge you to take the same challenge that he issued and to be eating together with your family, because this can make all the difference. And the caveat I'm giving is that it should be a tech-free zone. Meal times are tech-free zones in my house. That may have to do with the fact that my family is Italian and they love food, right? They love mealtime. No, but really, truly, we have established a very strict tech-free zone at our table, and we've given our kids permission to call us out when we bring tech to the table. It's no tech at the table. This is a time to engage. And if you don't know questions to ask or conversation to have, just say something as simple as, "Tell me your high and your low today." And maybe it would be brief, maybe it would be long, but it will give you those points of connection and great follow-up for conversation for later. So at my table, we say, where are the highs and the lows and the where did you goes and tell me about your day. It comes from some preschool song somewhere that we learned, and we still use it to this day, even though my kids are adults, and I love it. When my kids come home from college, and here I've got my college daughter saying, "Oh, I can't wait to come home." And they ask, "What are the highs and the lows? And where did you go? And tell me about your day." And we go around the table and we take turns. Now, sometimes we're eating off paper plates. Sometimes we're having peanut butter and jelly. Sometimes, if I'm really honest, we're eating fast food in the car while we're driving to the next event, but we have everyone put their phone away, we say grace, and we eat together before my husband starts griping at everybody to make sure, get your trash, where's your trash, pass up your trash. We always have those things. I don't know if any of you have a dad like that, but the dad in our family, thank you, Shane, for keeping all of the trash out of the car. I appreciate that. But I encourage you to adopt family dinner. Family dinner is so important, and that is the habit that we are discussing this week. So today is Friday, and that means it's Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, and I will be sharing with you some questions that I have gotten during the week. And I've got a pretty serious slate of questions this week. I've gotten some pretty heavy things, but we will walk through them together because I love nothing more than to prescribe hope for healthy relationships, hope for healthy families. In a world where it seems like it is just doom and gloom and bad news all the time, I am here to tell you there is good news. There are great families just like yours who are doing their best just to raise kids who love God and serve others. I mean, that really, if you're honest, is every parent's heart cry. But we also have imperfect families because, newsflash, we are imperfect parents and we can't expect everything to go well. And this is just always something that is so near and dear to me and why I wrote the book I did, Behind Closed Doors, because I recognize that life isn't always perfect. And I see that behind home doors, behind my clinic door, behind heart doors that people open up to me, that we all have struggles. And you know what? It's okay. And not everybody has to know everything, but you do need a trusted circle of people that you can go to who are going to know your heart and who are going to know your kids and who are going to love you through those challenging moments. So one of the first questions I'm going to share with you today is about what I get the most questions about, hands down. I don't even have to think about it twice. And that is smartphones and social media. There are just seem to be millions of questions that we have as parents. And if we're honest, there's not really good answers. And the messages that we are giving as parents a lot of times are very countercultural to the messages that our kids are getting from other sources. So for example, and let me give you a caveat here. Some of the things we're going to talk about today may not be appropriate topics for little ears, and I will approach them gently. But if you have little sensitive ears around, it may be a time to adjust your listening audience. So I will give you that caveat here, right here, right now. And yes, I'm stalling for just a minute just to give those people just that extra minute. So thank you for that grace. But for example, we see an epidemic of sexting. Now, this is kids sending explicit images or text-based messages to each other. And we're giving the messages saying, like, don't do it. This is not a good idea in any way, shape, or form. But if a teenager went to a popular teen magazine, which you can easily find examples of in various ones, they not only say, should they do it? That's not even a question. The question is not, should they do it? The question is, how should they do it? When should they do it? With whom should they do it? How can they do it best? I mean, these are very divergent messages that we're giving. And that's why it's so important for us as parents, if we want to influence our kids' worldview, we have to see the world as they see it. And parents, sometimes we don't want to do this. We want to see the world as we want it to be for them, because honestly, a lot of things they're facing are really hard and really scary. And so we just want to imagine that we're all back in Mayberry with Andy Griffith. I wish this was true. Honestly, I happen to love the Andy Griffith Show, or, you know, Leave It to Beaver, or any of those other shows that you think about how life, you know, seems so simple, but life is not like that. And so we have to understand that our kids need to see us as not out of touch. They need to see us as experts in their life. They need to see that we know what is going on in the world. We are a source of answers, and we are their guide on the side, because so often parents, we want them to be where we are, but they don't know how to get there. Now, we can look back with hindsight and we can see very clearly it's just a straight shot down the road. I'm telling you exactly where to go and what to do. But they don't see it that way. They don't see it. So imagine, you know, if we're looking downhill at them and we can see them clearly, but they're down at the bottom of the hill and they're looking uphill and they don't yet see us. We can see it as a straight, easy road, but they see it as a hill with no one in sight. And that may be a silly analogy, but this is why parents, kids need our time so much more than they need anything else. They need us to be physically present in their lives. They need us to be emotionally present in their lives. They need us to be mentally present in their lives. Because how many times are you physically present as a parent, but emotionally or mentally, you are checked out? You are not there, because we do have so many demands on our time. And this is the best piece of advice that I can give you, is just to be physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually present in your child's life. Because if you're physically present, they're more likely to ask you a question as they're just walking by. And I know I talk about this a lot, but one of the worst things I have seen in the impacts of smartphones is the disconnection of families. So we have families living in the same house who are all absorbed in their own screen and communicating to each other through text message. I mean, this is not the way that relationships are strengthened. So I am going to give you this this question that I got from a listener. She said, hello, I have a 14-year-old daughter who has a phone. She is constantly texting a boy at school all day, nonstop, when she is at a home. I think she even texts him like what she should wear or buy. It's like an outside influence. We are Christians, and I know he isn't, although she tells me she converted him. Please give me advice on how do I get her to stop this. She isolated herself from friends that are girls. I ask her about the boy, and she tells me it's none of my business. Now, it is, let me just say to the mother who sent this to me, the fact that you are concerned about this, the fact that you recognize that there is an issue, that is more than half the battle, for sure. And it's really hard, because as parents, a lot of times we're more afraid of how people will perceive us or our children as the problem more than we are scared of the problem. So when we come back, I'm going to give some advice for parents who are struggling like this. And I'm also going to talk about some questions I've gotten about movie choices. I'll be talking about over-the-counter birth control, Delta 8, and Zenfluencers. So if those are things that you don't know about, you need to. So stick around and I'll be right back. Little things can make a difference. A little note, a little smile, the small stone that David hurled at Goliath, and precious little babies. When you sponsor an ultrasound at preborn, your gift, no matter how small, makes a difference in a big way. Who will this little baby become? What giants will this baby slay? How about the mother who was spared from unspeakable sorrow because of you? You never know the difference you're going to make with a donation of just $28 to introduce a mother to her child through ultrasound, which doubles a baby's chance at life. All you have to do is take a few small minutes to make a life-saving donation. Preborn will take it from there as their network of clinics rescues 200 tiny babies every day and shares God's love with mothers. Preborn has a 100% charity rating, so you can give with confidence. Get involved today by dialing #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to a Friday edition of Ask Dr. Nurse Mama. And before the break, I was talking about this continual problem of smartphones and social media. And, you know, it's not possible for me to speak specifically to any one situation because I don't know all of the ins and outs of that. But I can give some general advice. And I also advise you, if this is you, to seek advice from relevant people, whether that's a healthcare provider, whether that's a pastor or a spiritual leader or mentor, or whether that's from a family member or from a teacher or from a counselor. Don't be afraid to ask for help when we're in over our head. And, you know, I read this interesting statistic that when parents have a problem, about 85% of the time, the first thing that we go to is Google. Google, that is what we do. But only about 15% of people will go to a trusted friend for advice. Now, friends, there is something seriously wrong if we are having enough faith in our Google answer and not enough faith in our friends. I mean, really, these are the people that we live with, that we do life with. And if you've heard me talk before, I've talked about five people that you need in your life, in your circle of influence. And I can go over those later, but I just encourage you to have people around you that you can go to, because these are things that are very difficult to do alone. Even in the case of this question from this particular mother, you know, when you have to go against your kids, you need support to do that, because it is very hard, because your kids will tell you things like, "You're ruining my life. You just don't understand." They may even say things like, "I hate you." And that can be so incredibly painful. And to have somebody wise and outside the situation who can look and give you wise advice and encourage you to stay the course, that is important. So let me talk a little bit about phones and social media. First of all, it should be no surprise to you, especially if you're a regular listener, I think waiting as long as possible to get a phone or social media is the best course of action. Wait as long as you possibly can. When you first start using phones, don't be afraid to be the parent that gets a flip phone. I was that parent. You are not alone. My kids know the pain of having to text words using, you know, 555 444-33 or whatever it is, you know, trying to text numbers to get words. My kids know that pain. Does it bother me? Not one bit. I was confident in what I provided for them, and I gave them messages like, God gave you to me. You are my responsibility, and I am going to do the very best job that I can. And if that means that you get upset with me every now and then, I love you enough to let that happen. It is not going to rattle me. And I've said this before too, and not official advice, but something I did personally, I would tell my kids when they would fight me. I'd say, look, I have more money than you. I have more friends than you. I have more life experience than you. I have more resources than you. And frankly, I have more willpower and skin in this game. So if you want to fight me, go ahead. But I'll win. So we can do it the hard way or the easy way. The key in all of this, though, is to say these things with love and kindness and compassion and strength. To speak from a place of strength, but from a place of love or compassion. When these messages are delivered in anger, they are completely nullified. We cannot speak in anger because our kids cannot interpret the messages that we're having. It is just an automatic disconnect when they're trying to translate our messages through anger. So you have to be calm, and that is difficult. So the thing is, though, teens are challenged and young kids are challenged with underdeveloped character to handle the overexposure that comes through social media and smartphone use. When their decisions can be made at the click of a thumb, their brain is not working as fast as their thumbs. That is dangerous to give kids. And you know, we worry about drugs at school, we worry about vaping at school, we worry about weapons at school, but the smartphone is the most powerful weapon that almost every kid is carrying in their pocket every day because words are so powerful. Words are so powerful, and kids can use those phones to text or to have social media, and just in the case of this question, to gain influence, because kids are so susceptible to grooming. And I don't mean that just in a predator kind of way. I mean that in a unhealthy relationship way. Kids can be groomed into an unhealthy relationship, like it sounds like this one is. So my biggest advice here, when you have a situation that seems like it's out of control, take control back. Do it kindly, do it calmly, do it confidently, and make sure you have a wraparound support, because kids can really act out in this time. They could, I know you're scared of things like them harming themselves or running away, and all of those things can happen. So that's why you've got to have help in assessing your own specific situation and think, what resources do you need? Is there an underlying mental health issue that you need help of a healthcare provider? Is there an underlying spiritual issue that you need help from someone at your church? Is there a safety issue that you need to make sure their environment is safe so that, you know, there's nobody, they're not sneaking out of the house, they're not harming themselves, all of those things. We have to realize that anything can happen, and we have to drop the not my kid mantra and think that any kids are susceptible to making poor decisions. And when they have online access, whether that is through communication and text messages or social media, that online growth exceeds or it's out of sync with their character development. It doesn't mean that they're bad kids or that they have bad morals. It means that that online exposure has exceeded their character growth, and it puts them at risk for making small mistakes on a very big stage. And the stakes are really high. And teens don't develop the capacity to think abstractly about a situation until their late teen years. So they're very vulnerable to harsh interpretations of black and white, likes or not likes, or what people say on that screen. We also know that having a smartphone, having social media, it significantly impacts brain development, because when they get a digital connection, it gives them brain stimulation. It gives them dopamine, oxytocin, other feel-good chemicals that start to create a preferred pleasure pathway in their brain. So parents, listen to me here. When your teen when your kid is communicating more on their digital device than they are with you in person, you are creating an environment in which their brain is starting to learn to prefer those digital interactions to in-person ones. Now, I know that's harsh, and some of you probably feel guilty about it. It's something I struggle with too. I struggle with it myself. But that is the truth, and we need to hear it. And we need to know that as parents, we have got to cut down the time that we are spending on these devices. And it's not about being the phone police. It's not about saying, okay, only 30 minutes a day, and that is it. It is about providing compelling alternatives and making that relationship engagement so much better than anything they find online. Now, you may be thinking as a parent, no, that there's no way, because kids want to be with their friends more, and there's no way I can compete with this video game. But you know what? Research says you can. Research says that parents are the most influential people in their kids' lives, and that kids want to spend time with their parents. They just don't act very excited about it. But just invite them into your life. You don't need to take them to some fancy place or expensive thing. You just need to invite them into your daily life. If you're taking a walk or if you're cooking dinner, they are so, honestly, our kids love to know that we want them to be around us. So those are the things to consider. But from a practical stance, I think using social media shouldn't even be an option until at least age 13. That is the age set for almost every social media platform. And that is this age that it should start to be a conversation. And not every kid is ready at the same time. So if you have multiple kids, one of them might get a phone when they're younger, one older. It's all about privileges and responsibility. Social media phones shouldn't be guaranteed by age in years, but by character in milestones. It's always okay to reset boundaries by saying, I have learned some new information that is going to help empower you to be healthy and safe. I know you're not going to like it, but we are going to need to reset this boundary. So I'll talk to you about it. I'll answer any questions you have. I'm here to support you during this. I realize it's going to be difficult, but it's going to happen. And that's what we need to say. And parents, again, if this is a struggle in your home, we need to do a gut check on our own social media use. Are we demonstrating healthy behaviors and patterns of online engagement? Because if your kid is doing something that is really annoying or that you find troublesome, the honest truth is if you hold up a mirror, you're most of the time going to find the root of that behavior in yourself. That's not a guilt trip. That is just a conviction, a healthy thing to get us to look at our own patterns of behavior. So all of that to say, first of all, don't be afraid to be the parent. Set boundaries, set them firmly, kindly, confidently, with compassion, and have wraparound support. Recognize that setting boundaries can cause a lot of emotional distress. You need support. And your child needs support during that time. And every situation is going to be a little different. But doing it now is so important because we are teaching their brain how to respond to the world around them. And if we stop those negative patterns early, their brain is so neuroplastic that it can rewire itself much more easily than when they are adults. Okay. Continuing on this theme of screens, I'm telling you, technology, screens, media, it is just the bane of our existence as parents. I feel your pain. And this question I got from a listener says, my daughter and I disagree about her movie choice. She wants to watch the movie Poor Things with Emma Stone. When I voiced my concern, she told me, I'm out of touch, I don't understand humor, and that it's not supposed to be serious. All of her friends' mothers said they could watch it, and I'm the only holdout. My daughter is begging me to watch it with her friends and told me I can't stop her even if I try, and that she will hear all about it even if she tries not to. Should I hold out or let her watch it? Okay. So actually, I had posted about this and talking about just the general movie market for teens. And I am seeing a focus on the macabre. If you're not familiar with that word, it's M-A-C-A-B-R-E. And the definition of that is dwelling on gruesome things, horrifying things, ghastly things, grim atmospheres preoccupied with violence. And that is the trend that I see. Now, why? Because it draws teen audiences in droves. They have salacious, over-the-top, morbid curiosity. Well, that's what marketers want. They want people to be talking about this. And I saw a social media trend after another similar movie was released recently, where the trend was to show your face after you saw the movie, and people would show these shocked faces. Well, of course, that generates curiosity, and they think, what happened that made you so shocked? And they want to see it. Now, when then people start asking, like, I don't have access to the movie, or I'm not allowed to watch the movie, or I'm scared to watch the movie, they start whispering these things to their peers. And honestly, it opens a conversation for things that are beyond the boundaries of appropriate, of what kids should be talking to each other about. But it's been laid out there in film, and so it seems more natural. And inquisitive minds are irresistibly drawn to acquire the secrets to that insider conversation. Now, this particular movie, Poor Things, this recently won an Oscar. And, you know, automatically, I know we all have certain thoughts about that, right? I mean, that can be just a statement in and of itself, but it has blockbuster stars Emma Stone and Mark Ruffalo, who have been in many very popular movies, and it plays in mainstream theaters. And the disturbing nature of the plot can just be underestimated because this is normalized. Now, again, I'll give a warning about sensitive ears. I'll speak gently, but you need to guard some sensitive ears here. This genre is advertised as fantasy or comedy. So the premise is a pregnant Victorian woman takes her own life by jumping from a bridge, and a scientist finds the baby in her womb is alive and transplants the baby's brain into the mother to bring her back to life. And I'll tell you, this is a pretty gruesome, carnal, explicitly graphic journey of exploring base desires with complete abandon. And I've heard this movie compared to Frankenstein. But, you know, that scientist in Frankenstein viewed the monstrous creation with pity and with revulsion and recognized it was inferior to God's creation of man. But this plotline depicts the opposite, and that the scientist's creation is superior to humans who are made in the image of God. And there's envy and admiration for this lack of inhibition and freedom to explore dark desires. Now, here is where we cannot cue righteous indignation. We cannot lecture our kids because they won't listen to that. They will not be swayed by that in many instances. They'll just say, you don't understand, just like this girl said to her mother. The greater task here is equipping and empowering our kids to intentionally choose to consume things that are true, honorable, just, pure, lovely, commendable, and worthy of praise. Give them a code word to get out of that situation and empower them to be confident in their decision. You can ask them questions like, how do you make decisions about the media you're choosing to consume? What information sources do you use to guide your choice? How comfortable are you in expressing a different opinion? Well, we'll finish that conversation and talk about Zenfluencers when we come back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, friends, to Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. Man, we are talking about all kinds of tough things, but we are all in this together. You are not alone, friend. And the fact that you're here just tells me that I appreciate your investment in the kids around you, whether you're a parent or a grandparent or a godparent or a bonus parent or just any person who is invested in the life of young people. Thank you for that, because kids need us more than ever. They need our old school social skills, if I'm being honest, to partner with their new worldview, because there are all kinds of things they face that have to do with these digital interactions, and they have so much trepidation and fear about in-person reactions and interactions. And you can see all of this anxiety playing out over TikTok as kids practice just something as simple as ordering coffee, like a plain coffee. They'll say, okay, small coffee, please. And then they go up to the counter and they'll say, blah, blah, blah. They can't even speak. This is called order anxiety, and it's well known among kids. But what gives parents anxiety is the choice of media. Now, when we were growing up, you had to go to the Blockbuster and you had to hope that they weren't sold out of the movie that you wanted, and you had to come and put it back in the VCR, hope that somebody had been kind enough to rewind. Is there anybody else in my generation out there understanding this? And then you would watch it and return it. But today it is absolutely overwhelming to think about the choices that kids have at their fingertips, streaming on their devices. And technology, honestly, is constantly working against parents. So, for example, in one of the latest Apple operating systems updates, it allows kids to stream media through text messaging. So you might think, well, my kid doesn't have an entertainment app. They don't have a video streaming app. Well, if they have text messaging, then all of a sudden they do. They can FaceTime and share screen now. So there is always a way for technology to get around us. Now, remember that technology in and of itself is not a bad thing, just like a car is not a bad thing. But we have to set boundaries around it. So don't be afraid to be the parent and clearly outline rules and expectations for media consumption. And ask your kids, as I said before the break, how do we as a family make decisions about what media we choose to consume? What information sources are you using to guide your choice? So I know a tool that my family uses is Plugged In Online. This is a Christian movie review source, and I can go and read about the movie beforehand and talk with my kids about it and say, here's the content. Do you feel like this is true, honorable, just, pure, lovely, commendable, worthy of praise? And we'll talk about how they choose to spend their time. And then ask them, how comfortable are you in expressing a differing opinion when your peers see something like, this is funny or admirable, when it's really not? That can be hard. And recognize that our kids will make poor choices. And if they do, if you have already outlined the consequences of that and you deliver that calmly and kindly, just with a measure of grace, recognizing that a lot of times when kids see something that they shouldn't see, then that can be traumatic for them. I will never forget when I was in middle school and Home Alone was out in the theater, and some girls from church, older girls who I thought were so cool, they asked me to go see Home Alone with them. I said, yes. I begged my parents. It was very difficult to get a yes, but I got a yes. And as soon as I got in the car, these girls started dying laughing and said, guess what? We're not going to see Home Alone. We're going to see Jean-Claude Van Damme. I had no idea who that was, but let me tell you, about 5 minutes into the movie, I was so scared, I went to the bathroom, but I didn't know what to do. I didn't have a phone that I could call and ask for help out of that situation. And so many times that's what happens to our kids. They just get in a situation that's over their head. Now, one of the situations that is over their head is Zinfluencers. Have you heard of this? It's Z-Y-N, like influencer, but with Z-Y-N. ZYN, Zen, is one of the newest nicotine tobacco-free products to hit the market. These are oral pouches that are about a half inch in size, and they stick to your gum, and they're nearly undetectable when used. So most of you know, like if someone is using tobacco, like you can see that in their mouth, but this is very, very savvy. Like it's almost impossible to tell that someone is using it. So what is the big deal? Well, Zen shipped 350 million cans this year. That's 15 pouches a piece. And that was a 62% increase from the year prior. This industry made $1 billion in sales in 2022, so it's definitely popular. For comparison, one cigarette has about 5 to 10 milligrams of nicotine, but pouches can have as much as 28 milligrams of nicotine. Now, there is no tobacco in these products, and they are designed to be used by adults who are trying to quit smoking, but that does not make them safe for kids to use, especially kids who have not used a nicotine product before. Now, what we're seeing for the first time since vaping became popular about 15 years ago is we're seeing the numbers of vaping decrease, but this pouch thing is increasing, giving us some feeling that this is like the new vaping. And about 1.5% of teens reported using these pouches in 2023. Now, you may be thinking 1.5% is not very much at all, but that is a lot of kids. And that number is expected to rise dramatically. This is compared to about 10% of kids use e-cigarettes. Now, the takeaways are, again, these are intended for adults who are trying to quit smoking. They're not supposed to be marketed to kids, but guess what? That's happening. Pouches have been pending FDA approval since 2020, but they haven't gotten it. But they're allowed to sell them while the application is on the market. So there are feasible health risks. It's not good for your heart, this much nicotine. And obviously something adhered to your gums. Every dental professional out there is saying this cannot end well. And they also have chemicals like ammonia and formaldehyde. And let me tell you, I'm seeing this even in my own kids' social circle. This is wildly popular. Nicotine is highly, highly addictive. And if you missed my show on vaping, go back and look on the podcast list and you can find that where I talk all about that, or in my book, Behind Closed Doors. But in short, it increases the number of receptors in the brain by billions with a B. And every single one of those receptors is craving a connection. So if you start using these products as a teen, it more deeply influences your brain development, and it makes it so much harder biologically to quit. So what is a Zenfluencer? Well, this is an influencer who promotes pouch use on social media. Now, again, they're not supposed to, you know, the social media companies are taking them down and monitoring them, all of those kinds of things we've heard before. But what do we do? Well, first of all, don't think my kid would never. It can be really easy to try something that appears so harmless. But kids have poor decision-making skills. They need lots of guidance. And listen, it's important to talk to your kids about it before it happens. They need to be informed and empowered to say no. Every week in my community newsletter, I see criminal charges related to possession of vaping devices or nicotine or tobacco products. They need to know about this before, but not from a fear-based perspective, because those kinds of fear tactics, they don't work. They're very effective in generating fear, but they are painfully ineffective in triggering and causing behavior change. So don't lead with a lecture. Cultivate curiosity. Ask them questions. Ask them, hey, I heard this crazy word today, Zenfluencer or Zen. Have you ever heard about it before? And they may say, no, I don't know anything about that. And you say, well, I think that we should know about this and just, you know, make sure that you're prepared to respond if you should encounter this. Or if they do know about it, they can share with you. And kids love to teach us things. But if, you know, if your teen, you find your teen is using these things, stay calm. That's so hard to do. But I really encourage you to seek advice from a healthcare provider, because they can help you look and see, have there already been any detrimental effects, and how do we talk about this in a way that is effective, and making sure that we use every resource we have because it is so highly addicted. So if you have teens at home, ask your kids what they would do if they were offered Zen or some other nicotine pouch by someone else, and how they could create a plan to say no or leave the situation. I've also seen a lot of parents in parenting forums posting pictures of these pouches and saying, what is this? Because it doesn't even look like anything, you know, that you really would know what it is. And so that is important to do. I'll give you a short story I had from a listener. She said, I'll share this quick story with you. This past week, I asked two of my teen daughters what they knew about vaping. We had a great conversation about their experience with friends vaping in the bathroom at their high school. I was shocked. At the end of the conversation, my oldest daughter asked with a hint of admiration in her voice, how do you know about so much about vaping, Mom? The mom told me, win-win, thanks to your show and behind closed doors. So listen, I'm in it with you and figuring this all out too. It is really, really hard stuff. But talking about one other medication, I do also want to answer some questions I've been getting about over-the-counter birth control. Now, I first started talking about this last summer when the FDA announced that there was going to be, for the first time, an oral contraceptive available that has previously been available by prescription, available on as over-the-counter. And this is a medication called Opill. And there is no age restriction. So this means teens can purchase it. And I will tell you, I have spoken with a teen this very week who did just that and purchased birth control over the counter. So we need to be in the know. So here are the facts on this. First of all, this is a mini pill. It means it's progestin only. So for people who are using it appropriately, it has fewer side effects than combination pills that have estrogen and progestin in them. But there are contraindications and precautions. So if you have heart disease, if you have diabetes, if you have high blood pressure or blood clots or migraines or seizures, all of those things, then there, again, are contraindications and precautions. My concern is teenagers do not go to the pharmacy and say, well, let me ask and make sure there's no contraindications or precautions. No, they think if it's over the counter, it's safe. I can take it. And now the Catholic Church formally has expressed some concerns about risks of cancer, delay in diagnosis of cancer, other infections, and exploitation by traffickers. The latter part, you all know that I'm very heavily involved in anti-trafficking work, and I echo that concern a lot. Now, other groups advocating against abortion, they have refrained really from critiquing this because there is a position thinking it could decrease abortion demand. But one of the requirements for this over-the-counter is that there has to be a pharmacist on duty to answer questions when it's sold. And just this week, it started being sold at opill.com and Amazon. Now, the cost is really low, so the suggested retail price for a month's supply is $19.99. That's great for people who may use this appropriately or need to access it, or, you know, there's all kinds of arguments and positions to be had for adult users, and I'm not going there today. I'm talking about teens. This $19.99 price point makes it very accessible for teens. And it means, what does this mean for us? And how do you talk to your kids about it? Well, first of all teens need open and honest conversation about their sexual health. They need to know how their bodies work. They need to know the realistic risks of pregnancy and infection. And they need regular preventive care with a qualified health professional that you trust to partner with you to optimize your teen's health. Most of all, they need to be empowered to say no to pressure. They need to know that abstinence is the best choice and the only sure way to prevent pregnancy and infection and emotional harms in their life at this time. And we need to be open and curious in our conversation about this. Again, you'll hear me say this about every subject. We have to, as much as it's tempting, avoid judgy lectures or fear-mongering and tell them. I tell my kids this all the time. I told one of my kids this just before I came on the air. You know you can always tell me anything. You know you can always talk to me about anything. And it seems like it doesn't matter how many times I tell them. They're like, are you sure? Okay, really? Can I do this? Yes, you can always talk to me about anything. So I would encourage you, if you have teenagers, to talk through scenarios of what they would do if a friend asks them to help them get it. That is a situation I encountered not too long ago with saying, hey, I need you to go get this for me. I don't want anybody to know it's me. You can just say you're getting it for a friend. What would it be? Now, parents fear this conversation thinking, I don't want to give my kid ideas. Believe me, they already have ideas and they're really not good. Exercise your parental privilege to give them good ideas. So that wraps it up for this episode of Ask Dr. Nurse Mama. I hope that you will tune in next week. We have Share-a-thon coming up. And in the meantime, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you and give you peace. And we'll see you here again next time where we prescribe hope for healthy families.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.